So see, all those people who left don't know that you guys are getting free food. So there you go. They're out. So I do want to share with you, number one, if you want to tweet during the session, feel free to. I've done some sessions where they actually have the Twitter feed on the two sides, and it's always interesting to see that happening in real time when someone says, this guy really sucks, and I see it up there, and you're trying to ignore that. But feel free to tweet, and if you link to me, I do promise that I will link right back. So one of the things I'll share before we get into the presentation is who Enjoy Life is. It'll just give you a quick background of why we do what we do. We are a gluten-free, allergy-friendly company. And if you're anything like me, you're tired of hearing about gluten-free products, right? It's in the news all the time. You would think that the whole world has become allergic to wheat and having gluten issues. It's not true. It's a relatively small segment of the population, but we do get a lot of buzz. A lot of people will talk about being gluten-free. But when you look at the actual numbers, we always say we're an allergy-friendly company. There's 100 million consumers that we're going out to. And so what we're going to talk about today is how we reach them through social. And when you break down the 100 million users, 3 million of people in the United States have celiac disease. Another 22 million people eat gluten-free products for one reason or the other. And then there's 75 million people who either have food allergies or food intolerances. So that is our target market. Interesting statistic, 1 out of 13 children today have food allergies. 1990, it was 1 out of 50. It's a whole other talk as to why this is happening. Just know that what we do is we provide food products for people that have to eat allergy-friendly or gluten-free. And so what does that mean? If you look in the top left, it means that all of our products are free of what's called the top 8 allergens. So everything that we're free of is free of egg, dairy, wheat, soy, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish. Anyone here from Canada? So in Canada, it's actually the priority 12. So they add mustard, sesame, sulfites, and they break out crustaceans from shellfish. And if you're here from the EU, they add two more, celery and lupin. We have a real problem in our food chain. Again, it's a whole nother talk. Whatever we're doing is causing this high incidence of food allergies. So 13 years ago, we created this company to develop products that meet the needs for all of these people. And we are a company of symbols. So in addition to being certified gluten-free, all of our products are verified non-GMO. All of our products are kosher. They're all halal certified for the Muslim community. 75% of our products are vegan. And 6 of our products are paleo. Anyone here eating paleo? Nah. Paleo's crazy. I'm paleo. It's crazy. I'll share that with you. So this just gives you an idea of the company itself. And we like to say that we've become the trust mark of choice. And if you don't know this term, trust mark, I highly recommend reading a book by Kevin Roberts called Love Marks. And Kevin Roberts was the former CEO of Saatchi & Saatchi, and he came out with a book a number of years ago talking about love marks. And basically what he says is that companies own trademarks, but consumers own love marks. And you want your consumers to love your product, your brand, your company. And so we've adapted it to say that we're also the trust mark of choice. Because when our consumers see this red logo, they know that the products are safe. Now, why should you care about this little company called Enjoy Life? Well, I'm going to not bury the lead, so I'll share it with you early on, that last year we were acquired by Mondelez. So the Mondelez that owns Oreos and Nutter Butters and Triscuits and Wheat Thins came to us and said, hey, we love what you're doing. We have no idea how you're doing it. We don't get what you're doing social, but we love it. And we'll acquire you. And so they did. So in February of 2015, we were acquired by Mondelez. I was with the company before. I'm with the company after. It was actually part of the deal. I'm an indentured slave. They said I can't leave. So I'm there. And continuing on all the things that that we've done. So now we'll get into how we do what we do. One of the things that we made a decision back in 2011, so we had been around for a number of years and we weren't growing fast enough, we decided to create what we call a consumer-centric marketing program. Now, that may sound pretty simple, but in reality, most companies don't do it. Most consumer packaged goods brands focus on the customer, not the consumer. And what we like to say is we're customer agnostic, but consumer centric. So when I'm sitting in front of Kroger, I will tell Kroger, you are my very best customer, and we will work with you 100%. And then I'll go out to Seattle and meet with Amazon, and I will tell them the exact same thing. We are customer agnostic. Our goal is to make sure that our consumer can find our products wherever they want. And so what we do is, everything we do is revolving around the customer: content, social, loyalty, print and digital advertising, digital path to purchase, and then experiential. So what we're going to talk about today is how we make all these work utilizing our social. So here's one takeaway that we always say when we're talking to people who are in the industry. Stop worrying about what you need to do in the social space and worry more about what your customers or your clients are doing. And so, you know, a lot of people will say we need to have a Facebook strategy or we need to have a Twitter strategy. And here's the reality: you don't. What you have to do is you have to have a consumer strategy, know what your consumers are doing, and then figure out how that fits with what you need to do. And by the way, don't try and do every platform. So right now I will tell you, here's what keeps me up at night. Snapchat keeps me up at night because I can't figure it out. Well, and I can't figure it out personally either. The other day I snapped my toe and literally sent that out, and I knew it was wrong. But I can't figure it out. I can't figure out their pricing model. I know how many people are using it, and I don't understand why people are using it. I don't understand why people want to have a dog face filter on it and tongues coming out with rainbows. I don't get it. And so it worries me that I don't get it. And I get a lot of things. I mean, I know I'm an older guy, but I get a lot of things. Snapchat I don't get, and I don't understand how it's going to work with brands. So right now, what we do is we're kind of testing the waters with it. We have one person who's snapping for the brand, and we're just, you know, we're not spending any money on it. We're spending time on it. And we're seeing, all right, what kind of, you know, what kind of viewership are we getting on the videos, on the posts? So, but we really do worry about what our customers are doing or what our consumers are doing. And the other thing, the other takeaway is we always take a digital first posture. Because if we don't take a digital first posture, we're never going to find our consumers. So just look at how people shop the stores today. You'll see that they're shopping with their mobile device in their hand. So digital first is really important to us. So what's happened in the food industry? So what happened is that you've heard this term big food. This is the cover of Fortune a couple months ago. And basically what they're saying is that big food is broken. You want to have transparency in food. You want to be able to reach the consumer. And so when Mondelez saw what we were doing and they saw how we were talking to our consumers, they said, we really want to take some learnings from you. And the best way to do that was to acquire. So a couple stats, and then we'll get into the meat of it. Number one is that 25% of all search results for brands today come up with user-generated content. So we always say, we don't own our brand. Consumers own our brand. Now, you may think you own the brand, but consumers will say whatever they want. Literally, during the session about an hour ago, I was reading some consumer posts on Facebook, and there were posts that were talking about the fact that our products are made in a facility that has peanuts. And now we are made in a dedicated, nut-free facility. And while I'm sitting there, and I wasn't breaking out in a cold sweat, people are going on and on about how did Enjoy Life change. It must have been when Mondelez purchased them, and it went on and on. So the consumers took over the brand. Now our team jumped in and started sharing it, and then we have influential bloggers who report, who post on our behalf. So we were able to contain the message. But the key is consumers own your brand, you don't own the brand, or your clients own the brand. Here's the other thing. 75% of consumers don't believe what companies tell them in advertising. Now think about this for a second. And I want to share how important consumer trust is. Is that if you see advertising and you love a product and you're ready to buy it, and you go to Amazon and you see three negative reviews from people you've never met, you won't buy that product. Isn't that weird? that you saw all this advertising, it all makes sense, but three people, and that is the magic number, three negative reviews, and you'll walk away from that. And these are from people that you don't know, but you trust them. People trust other people more than they trust brands. So I'll share another example. I travel a lot for both work and for speaking, and when I'm in an airport, I'll be sitting in an airport, and inevitably, someone will come up to me, and they'll say, are you going to be sitting here for a few minutes? And I, yeah. Can I leave my stuff with you? I just need to go to the bathroom. Now, here's what's interesting. They've never met me before. What if this is a scam? What if I just wear a sport coat to steal other people's computers from airports, right? I could be doing that. So why do people trust other people? And it's just human nature that we tend to trust our peers. So we really take that we take that knowledge, and when we're building our social platforms, it's how do we share these trustable stories. And then last stat that I'll share with you is that over 90% of all consumers today make a positive make a purchase decision based on a positive recommendation. So when we build these platforms, it's all about how do we share these positive recommendations. And Jeff Hazlett, who was a former CEO, CMO of Kodak, what he said was, it's not about the eyes, the eyeballs and the ears, but it's about the hearts and the minds. And so when we're building this whole consumer-centric strategy, it's less about how many likes we have, and it's more about the emotion. So one of the things, if you read through the description of this talk, it was how do you sell this to the C-suite? And one of the things that I will share with you is you have to convince them early on, stop looking at the number of followers, because that is no longer meaningful. What's meaningful is the emotion that those followers are sharing. So we do a lot of emotional studies. Share something else with you. We are part of a big company with small company budgets. So we still do it using Excel spreadsheets. Now we have a little bit bigger budgets now. So we are able to acquire some social emotion reporting software, but we still do a lot with Excel spreadsheets where we're going in and we're looking at how people are sharing emotions, and we build our own word clouds. So emotion is really important in how we're looking at social. So one of the things is that when you're creating this strategy, and social is going to be part of a strategy, know what your goals are. So the goals can't be, I want to have more likes. That's not a goal. That's going to be, you know, part of how you're measuring. So we created these three goals. The first being, we want to increase brand awareness. How many of you have heard of Enjoy Life before now? Okay, four. Obviously, that's our first goal, right? Because you don't know who we are. So increase brand awareness, and we want to increase brand awareness with our target consumer, which is the conscious eater. The second goal is we want to create relevance. So we want to make sure that all the interactions that we have with our audience resonates with them emotionally. And then we want to turn these consumers into advocates. So we want to build the passion. These are our three goals in social. And so what we ask ourselves with everything that we post, is it achieving one of these three goals? And it really keeps us focused. So, when we're posting on the different platforms, we make sure that we're not posting nonsensical things like a kitten eating a cookie, because it's really, it may help with brand awareness, but it's not going to do all these other things. So, having these goals up front are really important. So let's talk about some of the platforms and how they're working well for us. Pinterest is interesting. Anyone here from Pinterest? So if you ever sit in with Pinterest, one of the things Pinterest will tell you is they're not a social network. They're really big on telling you that. Now, there's a couple of reasons why they're telling you that. Because their followers have really flattened out. So what they've said is, well, it's not about social network. What they will tell you is that it is all about engagement and the number of pins that you're getting. And it's actually true with us. So what's interesting about Pinterest, it is our lowest number of people that are engaged with us. It is our highest referral rate to our website. because of recipes. So what we learned to do with Pinterest was we learned how to optimize all of our recipe posting on Pinterest, driving the traffic to our website. So it's our best referral, but it's our lowest social following, if you will. So, you know, this whole idea of social media and putting it all under an umbrella, it's getting really murky out there as to what's social and what's not social. We think Pinterest continues to do well, although they still are only at about 100 million followers. So the numbers are relatively small. But let's talk about Instagram. So you just heard Cassandra talk, you know, with Facebook, and you can't ignore Facebook, right? It's 1.6 billion. We'll talk about Facebook in a second. And with Facebook owning Instagram, they're putting a lot of resources behind it. So we have two strategies with our Instagram. With Instagram, and we were late to the game with our Instagram strategy, but our two strategies is we do some artistic photos that people tend to like, and then we really follow all of our consumers on Instagram. So if a consumer posts, we're reviewing Instagram posts all the time. We're looking for our products. We're doing it through search tags. So, you know, if someone is tagging the product Nut Free, we will find it, and we do that manually. So I want to introduce you to this person. This is Esther Trevino. And as you can see, Esther is kind of a typical Instagram person. 61 posts. She's following 137 people. She's got 90 followers. She's actually got a lot more now, but back when I took this, she had about 90 followers. And as you can see, she took a picture of our chocolate chips in a box, our chocolate chip cookies in a box. Now, we've done a lot of studies to determine why do people take pictures of packaged products. And here's what we found out. We have no idea. Right? Why do people do it? We don't know. They just do. So she took a picture of the box, and then she started to post some additional things. So here's what she, after she posted the picture, she went hashtag crazy, right? So hashtag enjoy, hashtag life, hashtag handcrafted, hashtag crunchy, hashtag chocolate, hashtag chip. I mean, hashtag crazy to the point where it makes no sense. But here's the other thing that's really interesting about Esther, is the information that she shared with us. So she posted this, and if you see in the middle, we responded and we said very simply, hope you enjoyed these cookies. That was our post. We respond to every Instagram post that goes up, and we do it live every day. Back when this was, I was the Instagram boy. So this was me responding. So I just wrote, hope you enjoyed the cookies. And here's what our passionate consumer wrote back to us. I always enjoy eating Enjoy Life cookies. Cookie face, happy face, cookie face. Okay. The chocolate chipped ones are definitely my favorite. I was diagnosed with celiac disease 2 years ago, and since then I've tried so many gluten-free cookies. By far, the Enjoy Life ones are the best. So many other companies claim to have gluten-free products, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here's what's interesting about this on Instagram. Number one, Esther has thrown all HIPAA laws out the window, and she's telling us everything about her health, right? She tells us when she was diagnosed. She tells us what her disease is. We didn't ask. We just said, we hope you enjoy your cookies. So what we try and do, the way that we use social, is we want it to be an open dialogue between us and the consumer. We never use social as a megaphone. It's kind of interesting that there's another social media speaking event that goes on in Chicago, and it's called Digital Megaphone. We think it's exactly the wrong term to use. So we don't use social as a megaphone. It's totally about having a dialogue. And so with Esther, we started this dialogue and we learned a lot from her, and she shared with a lot of her followers as to, you know, how she likes our cookies. So when you look at where we are today on Facebook, we have a little bit over 283,000 followers on Facebook. And in our world, in this gluten-free, healthy living, allergy-friendly area, we're the number one site on Facebook. I will tell you, and Cassandra can explain why, our growth on Facebook has slowed dramatically. And we're okay with it. You know, we're not chasing new likes. We're more about chasing that engagement and making it more relevant. But Facebook is really important to us. How many people have used Facebook Live? Okay, so Facebook Live just launched 10 days ago. It is Facebook's answer to Periscope. And the idea is that you can have a 30-minute live chat with the world that's following you. The difference between Facebook Live and Periscope is Facebook Live will archive on the page. So we're testing things with Facebook Live. We've got these 283,000 followers, and we're doing some live Facebook posts where we're taking people behind the scenes of Enjoy Life and showing them how our products are made. So we really like Facebook because of the scale, the 1.6 billion people who are watching it. Twitter, we have two official Twitter accounts. So we have my Twitter account. I tweet under Enjoy Life CMO, and it is a totally different strategy than our corporate Twitter account. So under here, I'm talking about things behind the scenes of Enjoy Life. I'm talking about marketing plans. I talk about what life is like being a CMO. Last night I happened to be, and you can't see the picture, I was reading an article that I thought was interesting. So the idea behind my Twitter feed is to share a little bit through the eyes of a marketing person. And then the corporate Twitter feed is slightly different. And again, you know, we have 25,000 followers, 24.2. We're okay with the number. We're not chasing the number as much as chasing the engagement. But it continues to grow on a regular basis. And you can see in this, we are sharing a little bit more information about the company. So in this case, we're sharing that we're gonna be out talking to consumers in Pasadena. So why do I share this picture? So everything that I'm showing you, everyone know what this is? What is this? It's Puppy Baby Monkey, which Mountain Dew spent $4 million on the Super Bowl to introduce. And hashtag puppy baby monkey, or baby puppy monkey, or one of, and it was $4 million wasted because you have no idea what it is. But these two people, Lindsay and Kathleen, this is our social media team. And they're responding 7 days a week, two people. So I'm gonna offend some people who are with an agency, and I apologize. What I will tell you as a brand is we never allow our agency to respond on our behalf. Because how can they know our brand as well as we know our brand? And how can they understand our consumer as well as we do? So, I used to be in an agency, and I responded for a lot of our brands on the agency side. I just believe it's really important for us to respond ourselves. So, we have two people, plus they have a manager. It is basically three people who are responding on a regular basis. They trade off on the weekends. They are both 1 year out of college. They both have food allergies or food intolerances, so they get it. And that's how we choose our consumer engagement team. And then they move up into the marketing team, and then we hire other people. So when you think about companies and you think about responding on a regular basis, people will always ask, how can you possibly respond to everyone live? It doesn't take that much time. But it is all that they do. It's two full-time people. And we're getting great ROI because we're seeing a lot of growth, which I'll share with you. So in just doing a recap, when you look at our top platforms, you can see that we're at 283,000 on Facebook, we're at 26,000 on Instagram, 24,000 on Twitter, and Pinterest, we're at about 5,500. And we monitor this on a regular basis. And so when we monitor, one of the things that we also look, and this is just a recap on Q1, is how many different pieces of content are generated by users. So in Q1, we had over 750 user-generated content from 345 people because we're providing them the platforms to share all this. And that's what we want. We want more of the information coming from our consumers and less from us. And why do we keep getting it? Because we engage with them right after it's posted. So, moving on to experiential and how it fits with social, one of the things that we do a lot of is we go to a lot of consumer events where we're handing out samples and we're handing out coupons. And so in Q1, we were at six events in North America, 30,000 people, we gave out 16,500 coupons, and 62,000 samples. And the reason we do it is because we found this stat to be true, that when someone tastes our product, they have 137% greater chance to buy it once they taste it. Because what does everyone assume? If it's gluten-free and allergy-friendly, it must be terrible. So we know that. So we have to feed people, and we feed a lot of people. So why am I sharing this with you when we're talking about social? Because what we do when we go to these events is everything is about how do we drive traffic to our social platforms. So as an example, we give out bags at the event so that people can walk around. We're usually the bag sponsor of the event. And as you can see, we're always promoting our social platforms everywhere we can. We like to hijack events. So at events where we're not the lead sponsor, so we find that the events, the lead sponsor has to pay $75,000. And if you're not the lead sponsor, you pay $40,000. So what we did is we took a 10-foot booth and we put a step and repeat. And we had our logo behind the step and repeat, and then we made word clouds. And what we told people was Instagram pictures in front of the step and repeat, and one winner for one event will get a $50 gift basket. And so when you go to an event, what you'll find is that Enjoy Life's name is always coming up on Instagram more than the lead sponsor's name, because we were able to figure out how to get people to post. When you come to the booth, and you get your samples, it's another way that we're promoting how to connect with us through social. So the key is that in everything we do, including all of our packaging that's in the stores, we're always promoting our social connections. So a takeaway is think digitally, but act analog. And what we mean by that is, yeah, social is online, but here's an interesting stat. 90% of all word of mouth happens offline. Think about it. 90%, you know, people say you go into the office, someone says, what'd you do over the weekend? You said, I went to a great restaurant. Where'd you go? I went to Girl and Her Goat. That was an offline word of mouth. You didn't text someone to tell them about that. So we always are thinking digitally but acting analog, and that's why we go to these experiential events, because we're using it to drive traffic to our social platform. And then there's another reason why we go. And this will sound really creepy and weird, but in this little world of gluten-free and allergy-friendly, I'm well-known. You guys have no idea who I am, and you've never heard of the company, which is okay. But so I go to the events, to these consumer events in, you know, Little Rock, Arkansas, to meet with our consumers and to connect with them. And then you get interesting posts like this. Oh my goodness, fangirl moment. I met Joel Awardee from Enjoy Life Foods, hashtag swoon. And why is this up here? Well, because I make my wife sit and look at this, and she says, who cares? But in this little world, what I realize is that I'm part of the product. I represent Enjoy Life. People tweet with me, and they want to connect because they want to talk about food allergies. And so I go to these events. It's that whole idea of thinking digitally and acting analog. So what were the results? So we said at the beginning, in 2012 we grew 41%. In 2013 we came back and grew 40%. And in 2014 we grew 41%. And that was after we had had 9 years of growth like 10%, 12%. And it was all because we created this consumer-centric strategy with social as our platform. And then after we had this growth, Mondelez came and said, okay, we're going to buy you. And we thought, well, this is weird because we are the antithesis of Oreo, right? We're all non-GMO. We're healthy. And Oreo is Oreo. Nothing better than an Oreo in milk, but you wouldn't call it healthy. But it's been an interesting relationship because they're giving us a lot of the resources to continue to do what we're doing. So I just want to shift for a second before we get close to the end and take questions and talk about, you know, in the consumer packaged goods world, whether it's food or other package, how this is changing. So if you remember that Fortune magazine and that Forbes cover, the Campbell's cover, the world is changing. So here's Gillette. Gillette is owned by Procter & Gamble. Anyone here from P&G or Gillette? Okay, good. So, you know, they have more money than anyone can imagine. And when they launch a product, in this case, a razor, they will spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on the photography, they'll get the website, they'll have landing pages. And then after spending all this money, what they'll do is, it's 2016. So imagine, we're in the middle of technology where we're gonna have driverless cars. But their idea of being state of the art is to create a cardboard display, put it in the aisle, and hope and pray people will walk down that aisle and buy the product. And that's how big companies today are selling food or selling health and beauty products. It's really, it hasn't changed for years, except disruptors come along. So here's a disruptor, Dollar Shave Club. How many people here buy from Dollar Shave Club? Wow, interesting, a half. So you bought a half a blade. Right, okay. So Dollar Shave Club, what they said was, is that razor blades are too expensive. What if we sold direct to the consumer? And what if we sold it at a discount? And what if we connected with the consumer via social and gather all of this data? So when Dollar Shave Club started, which was 3 years ago, they started with $35,000. And here's how they spent the money. They went and they created a YouTube video. And this was the founder, or this is the founder, of Dollar Shave Club. So this is the video. Oh, I'm not going to start it because I forgot to put the sound in.
Founder of DollarShaveClub.com. What is DollarShaveClub.com? Well, for a dollar a month, we send high-quality razors right to your door. Yeah, a dollar. Are the blades any good? No. Our blades are f***ing great. Each razor has stainless steel blades, an aloe vera lubricating strip, and a pivot head. It's so gentle a toddler could use it. And do you like spending $20 a month on brand name razors? 19 go to Roger Federer. I'm good at tennis.
And do you think your razor needs a vibrating handle, a flashlight, a back scratcher, and 10 blades? Your handsome ass grandfather had one blade and polio.
Looking good, pop up!
Stop paying for shave tech you don't need. And stop forgetting to buy your blades every month. Alejandro and I are gonna ship them right to you. We're not just selling razors, we're also making new jobs. Alejandro, what were you doing last month?
Not working.
What are you doing now?
Working.
I'm no Vanderbilt, but this train makes hay. So stop forgetting to buy your blades every month and start deciding where you're gonna stack all those dollar bills I'm saving you. We are DollarShaveClub.com, and the party is on.
So what's interesting about Dollar Shave Club is they started with $35,000. This was the first video that they launched, and this year, third year in business, they're going to do $147 million in selling razor blades. They're valued at $760 million because they've raised money through venture capital. And Gillette, this big company, is trying to figure out how this happened. And the way it happened is that they were able to connect with consumers on a one-to-one basis and create this relationship, create this dialogue and create the relationship. And so you see a lot of companies doing it, whether it's NatureBox selling snacks or Graze selling snacks, where the subscription plan is coming to you on a regular basis. This is all based on social selling. It's building that network of social platforms and then turning them into sales. So as you know, we come to a conclusion, one of the things that we say is stop thinking like a marketer or an advertiser and really start thinking like publishers and socializers. So publishing content is so important. You know, as an example, because of poor planning on my part, within the next hour, we're doing a live webinar, and this is geared towards the retail trade. And so we're doing a webinar on the growing special free from diet and how to maximize it in your stores. But one of the things that we're always working on is how do we create more content for the different consumers or customers that we're dealing with. And then we look at how we can make content really inexpensively. So we shot this in-house, not with a studio. 15 seconds. You've seen these tasty videos before. We spend $800 on this. We don't use outside agencies to develop this content. We just do it. Kathleen and Lindsay do it. It's kind of amazing the talent that the young people coming out of college, because they've been doing it pretty much their whole life. And we're posting new content like this every single week. So we're constantly generating new content on a relatively low budget. And just to show you how it generates, and we track this every week. So I'm just showing you our year-to-date numbers. One of the things we look at is how our web traffic is doing. So you can see our web traffic for the year is up 40%, 39.7. Our number of users are up 37%, page views are up 26%. And then something else that we track is how are they reaching us. So as you can see, mobile is where it's at. I think everyone knows that. We've been talking about it for a number of years, but the reality is it's 48.6% of our traffic is coming through mobile. And another 10% is coming through tablet, and the rest is desktop. And desktop is just going to continue to go down. Look at the growth rate. Mobile's up 79% this year. So everything we do is mobile-based. Snapchat will tell you that every video should be vertical, not horizontal, because it's enabled for mobile. So we try and do that. We really work on making things work for the mobile device. And so, you know, when we look at it, there's not a lot of advantages of getting older, but I'm going to tell you, it happens to all of us. It's going to happen to you. But here's one of the things that it does give you. It gives you perspective. So this is the way that we used to connect. This was called the computer room. We all had one in our house, and everything was tethered to the wall, and you had to ask permission to whoever else was living with you. Are you going to be using the computer tonight? No, I think I'm going to use the computer tonight. And that's what it looked like until this thing happened. And so then when the iPhone came out, all of a sudden we had a computer in our pocket and things changed, and so it changed the way we were connecting. And then tablets came along, and in 2015 we sold over 240 million tablets, but we all know that they're on their way down. So what's next? Well, it wasn't this. It wasn't Google Glass, but it was interesting, and everyone thought, well, this was the answer. And then everyone thought, well, this might be the answer. We don't know. So what we're constantly looking at as marketers or as publishers is we're less concerned about what the platform is and less concerned about what the hardware is, and just understanding that the consumers are moving quickly into different platforms, and so we're always testing new ideas. We think Facebook is really important, but here's the perspective, and Cassandra's not in the room, right? I remember when AOL was the biggest. And you got AOL discs all the time. And everyone said, no one's going to beat AOL, until Yahoo came along. And then Yahoo was the biggest. And everyone said, Yahoo's never going to be beaten, until Google came along. And then Facebook. And somewhere in some dorm room, there's a 20-year-old kid spending his parents' tuition money, not going to class, and developing the Facebook killer. So while we focus on Facebook today because we think it's really important, we're also looking at all these other new platforms because we never know where it's going to end. And so finally, in closing, what I would say is, as Ad Age once said, you know, when you're looking at social and digital, it really isn't just another platform. It's a total transformation in the way that we're selling and the way we're reaching our consumers. And we continue to modify our plan and our strategy to take advantage of that. So with that, I say thank you. I will open for questions, and you're welcome to connect with me. So thank you.
If you got a question, hands up nice and high so that I can see them. What sort of snacks did you bring us?
Oh, I didn't bring snacks. What I did bring,
because
the hotel won't allow us to bring snacks. So what you can do, you can come up, and I have, I got to get it on my bag, a coupon for a free product that you can take to any store, because we're available everywhere, no matter where you live. You just haven't seen it, go to the gluten-free aisle. If you're at Whole Foods, it's just in the regular aisle, and we'll give you a coupon for a free product. Any other questions? You guys want to go eat? Go eat. I'll get the coupons. I'll leave them up here. Thanks.